morning and welcome to the Sports Polygamy Podcast. It's the 22nd of October 2012 and I'm Eric George. I am joined, as always on a Monday, by my main lover Kirk Dalziel to break down something topical. How are you, Kirk?
I'm wrecked. I've been down supporting charity for the kids or something. We had to do an amazing race-style thing all through Perth and my hips hurt, my knees hurt, my ankles hurt. I now have a newfound respect for professional walkers because we weren't allowed to run, damn it. We weren't allowed to run.
Did you do the gimpy, like, finish?
Oh, yeah, I wasn't traveling well. I've got blisters and it just... Oh, luckily, there was nobody out there with paddles ready to disqualify me 400 metres from the end. Yeah, that's right.
Is this a lesson learnt? I mean, are you never doing charity ever again?
Yeah, well, you don't get paid.
Yeah, that's
free. Yeah, I don't do stuff for free. What the hell is this? I had to sell cupcakes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, the girl made them all. I just had to promote them. And then I didn't even do that. I left the other guy to do it and went and worked up in the country somewhere.
I really wish I could have been there to see you try to sell cupcakes. That would have made my day. Anyway, back to the topic at hand. I figured we might as well talk about sponsorship in sport because there was a little bit of controversy in the Bledisloe Cup match over the weekend, which was a fantastic game and something we'll get to later. But the All Blacks jersey kick, you know, the sacred, you know, last vestige of respectability in sports jerseys, never really had a major sponsor on there. Now it's got AIG.
Yeah, I gave up on this a long time ago. I assumed it would happen sometime. It's such a marketable jumper, and it was kind of cool that it didn't have a major sponsor on the front, and it was one of few rugby jerseys left in the world that didn't. But when I actually saw it, I don't think it was that bad. I mean, it's very understated. It's not like the eye-raping Qantas that's usually blazoned across the front of the Wallabies jerseys or anything like that. I mean, it was just three simple letters. So I think they did it very well. I think if they'd put a huge, like, coloured logo on the front of it, I probably would have hurled stuff at the TV. But it was pretty understated and kind of classy, I guess. But, yeah, it's a big move, and it cheesed off a lot of people over in New Zealand.
You're trying to tell me that you still weren't disappointed with it when you saw it?
Yeah, I was a little bit. I mean, I just don't like change, Eric.
Yeah.
I don't like change. But yeah, that was the cool thing about the All Blacks jumper. It was simply that. And every time somebody tried to put it on the front, like Steinlager tried to do it and then Adidas tried to do it, and they always told them to get stuffed. But
yeah,
maybe with rugby teams going broke in New Zealand like Otago, they need some extra cash.
I find it hard to believe that the All Blacks ever need more money. Like, that's the most marketable thing ever. People will, you know, you could make the jersey pink and people would still buy it. I mean, God, look at their away jersey. I just think that I fail to believe that it was that much of a necessity. I feel like there's a little bit of a greed involved here.
Oh, no doubt. But this comes along with professionalism, doesn't it? I mean, it's like playing American football or any of those sports. You don't need to make $20 million a year. What the hell are you going to do with $20 million a year?
Mm.
It's just the art of professionalism. And I guess they're trying to make it more sustainable or something. I don't know the reasons behind it, but it was kind of sad to see something on the front of it. And it just happened to coincide with us having our winning streak ended.
Well, as I've seen pointed out by quite a few people, the sum total of tries New Zealand scored since having a sponsored jersey is zero. You know, still winless. It's cursed. Yeah. The sporting gods are not happy.
The AIG curse.
Yeah.
They haven't won for a week. It's all over.
Yeah. I mean, look, you're pointing towards professionalism is correct, and it's precisely the reason it was so disappointing, because New Zealand's somewhere we looked for the kind of, you know, time walk back to a simpler era. It was nice to see a team which hadn't succumbed to the economic pressures that basically everybody else has. So that's what kind of made it a little disappointing. But your comparison to US sports is an apt one, because we're going to see the same thing in the NBA this year, as basketball is also finally conceded to small placements of sponsorships, I think, on the front of NBA jerseys. So another example of sports that had previously been very resistant to on-jersey advertising starting to introduce the thin end of the wedge.
Yeah, well, the problem is everything's just become so ridiculously expensive now to keep a stadium going, and even to pay the players. The salaries are becoming extremely, extremely tough. So if you're a small market team, you've got to make money somehow and be able to draw players to your team. And as long as it's not offensive, I really don't care. I mean, you're never going to get as crazy as motorsport, where you almost have a seizure looking at their cars because there's so much sponsorship on them. So, look, small placement, I'm not really fussed about. I'm not a big fan of huge ones like Sydney FC's jersey this year. Have you seen that?
No.
About 50% of the jersey is taken up by a huge webjet.com.au logo with a big mouse and the tail on it, and it just fills up the whole thing. I assume that's just to pay Del Piero's wages.
Probably.
But yeah, that's huge, that thing.
Yeah, I mean, that's been the thing with rugby league for quite a while. I mean, you look at rugby league jerseys and just about every square inch is covered in sponsorship. I did have the dates wrong with my NBA one. That's going to be coming in a year or two. Not this season, so we don't have to panic just yet. Perhaps we won't have to see Kobe in a sponsored jersey just yet. It's an interesting thing about the American model, though, because their whole thing has always been sponsoring the stadium and charging $10,000 for people to be able to go to the games, which they inevitably do. To pay for it rather than for going for every infinitesimal part of the jersey being sold away as well.
Well, I think the TV right money there is probably going to be a hell of a lot more, and also they can charge more to go to the games because the cities are so big where they have a stadium. I mean, your biggest city in New Zealand's a million people, so you can only you can only get 40,000 people into a stadium max sort of thing. Whereas when you've got 80,000 seat stadiums and you're selling them out every week and you're charging squillions of dollars for your TV rights, you don't really need to get advertising on your jersey. And the NFL's an incredibly successful league. They make silly amounts of money.
Yeah.
So they don't need it, obviously.
So what's the whole perception of it in New Zealand? I mean, obviously you've all got your sponsored stadiums and everything down there. If they started to jack up the ticket prices as well, would people really freak out?
I think so. I don't know if that's a driving factor for people not going to Super 15 games. I mean, I know I was scared off a little bit by the amount it costs to go to a Super 15 game. You could either pay $32, I think it was, to go watch a Super 15 game, or just wait for an All Blacks game to come and pay $50. And I know which one I'd rather go to.
Yeah.
And especially to pay 30-odd bucks every week just to go there. And by the time you buy a pie and everything, I mean, you're looking at $100 just to go and watch a game of rugby. So the ticket pricing's pretty horrendous.
Are there any stadiums left over there that haven't been named?
Eden Park.
Okay.
And boy, that'd be about it. I can't think of McLean Park in Napier, I know hasn't been named. But other than that, I mean, you're starting to...
Yeah.
Everything's named now. I mean, we wanted to call the Wellington Stadium the Cake Tin, and we weren't allowed to do that. It's now Westpac Stadium. Huzzah.
Still the Cake Tin on the podcast, though.
Yeah, it's still the Cake Tin on the podcast. I refuse to call it anything else. And the Taranaki Stadium is now Yarrow Stadium, I think, instead of the Fishbowl. So they all change a little bit, which is a shame. And I'm not a big fan of the stadium being named after something like having Etihad Stadium, something. I love having the MCG or the Gabba or something like that. Even there was a huge uproar here about having Subiaco Oval removed and having Patterson Stadium put in instead.
Yeah, well, obviously you've got the SCG as well in Sydney, but basically everything else is being sponsored. And it gets a little bit silly sometimes. Like, you know, it's a little bit more of a problem, I think, in Australia than in America, where you see stadiums changing sponsors quite regularly. So it can get a little bit confusing sometimes trying to keep up with the shifting nomenclature of these places.
Yeah, I have no idea what's going on over there anymore, where they're playing, and suddenly you're Heinz Field and you're something else the next week, and it becomes too hard to follow, doesn't it? And I don't know if it kind of detracts from the stadium, or you don't really get an affinity for it, I guess. I mean, that's the great thing about the SCG, is it's the SCG. There's so much history there, but if you changed it to Watties Stadium or Telstra Stadium or something like that, it suddenly loses its edge.
Yeah. And I think that you do have lucky situations like the SCG and the MCG with their membership base, and, you know, just the sheer draw card of the stadium means they should probably be able to hold out. But yeah, it depends. I think there are some which, for whatever reason, stick in the mind. But generally speaking, when you get some of these silly sounding stadiums, it's just a little bit odd. I think it's more of an issue in America, where they get real generic sounding you can basically just invent a corporate sounding company and put arena afterwards and it sounds plausible.
Yeah, exactly. But I don't think America's as bad as Australia, Eric. I think Australia is terrible in terms of advertising. It's especially when your rugby team isn't actually the Wallabies anymore. They are the Qantas Wallabies.
Yeah, that's pretty bad. Just before we move off on stadiums, though, my favorite terrible one in Australia, the Penrith Panthers home stadium, Centrebet Stadium.
Yeah, that's not good.
That's really bad.
I don't think, because betting already muddies the water of sport enough. You don't need to put it on the stadium and then have kids going, oh, look how amazing centre bet is.
I think we're just waiting slowly for rugby league to turn into Indian cricket in terms of betting situations.
Well, they've had a couple of scandals already. Get some more in there.
Yeah. So, as you were, Kirk.
Yeah, well, the Qantas Wallaby. What? Oh. Now, if you want to really get me going on sponsorship and branding and everything, stop selling the national anthem.
What?
That really gives me the shit. So Channel 9 is the king of this. They'll have Vanessa Amorosi on, and they'll say, Vanessa Amorosi won some insignificant award this one time, and you can get a new album from here. I was like, no, it's the national anthem.
Yeah.
Don't sell that. It really gives me the shits.
How long do you think it'll be before the same thing happens to the Haka Kirk? Have some dude holding up a banner behind it, dress them up in some kind of T-shirt.
Welcome to the Spates All Blacks Haka. All Black Haka sponsored by Spates. But yeah, Australia is really bad at this.
Yeah.
The worst is the racing season. I just want to run this past you. The four major ones.
Yeah.
AMI Victoria Derby Day, Emirates Melbourne Cup Day, Crown Oaks Day, and Emirates Stakes Day. When did the Melbourne Cup become insignificant to the person sponsoring it? It should be the Melbourne Cup sponsored by Emirates.
I imagine they threw a significant amount of golden oil at it, Kirk. I think everything has a price.
So do I. Everyone has a price. What is it? Gordon Gekko said that, didn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Well, the company I work for maintains a marquee there, and they have been known to throw many thousands of dollars at people to turn up for 10 minutes in their marquee. It's a bit ridiculous. Being in Melbourne in race season is just bananas in terms of how much of a song and dance it gets turned into. But it is a shame. I mean, you know, supposedly the race that stops the nation, you'd hope that people would have a little bit more respect for it.
It just makes it a little bit tacky, I think. I'm not a big fan of the sponsorship being first. It should be to keep the history and I don't really know what the word is, but to keep some mystery about it and to conjure up thoughts of the past and Maccabi Diva and all that, call it the Melbourne Cup. It is not the Emirates Melbourne Cup.
Yeah. What about retroactive? Do you think they could go back into the record books and do it? Do you think you could have NAB Farlap, that one?
Oh, that would be horrendous.
So,
where do you stop with it, Eric? Where do you stop?
I guess the thing is that all that money that they've gotten for the Melbourne Cup means that they can advertise it's got the biggest purse of any single horse race in the world, which has increased the international audience for it and made it this real significant event, which means that Australian horses can't win it anymore. But it, by the same token, it has turned it into an international event. So maybe it's sold its soul a little bit, but it's certainly put it on the map.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that is the thing. Sponsorship does get you the big purses and the big names and all the rest of it. But I don't like it, Eric. Maybe I'm just old. I'm an old man in a young man's body, which is aging very quickly.
Yeah, especially after today. Is there any other strange situations you can think of where stadiums and teams kind of get bastardized a little bit or get strange associations?
Well, since we're speaking about corporate whoredom taking over sports, Eric, I've actually found quite a good one. A amateur Greek soccer team was a little bit strapped for cash, so they decided to get sponsored by a brothel.
What?
Yeah. Members
a brothel?
Of Vukafalis Club wear hot pink practice jerseys reading Villa Erotica across the back.
That's bizarre.
Yeah, I mean, that's really selling your soul, isn't it?
You have to wonder what kind of sponsorship they provide the players for that, because, you know, often they try to get some kind of follow-through.
Some sort of kickback, you reckon? Big end-of-season party.
I guess one of the real, you know, major sponsors of sport all around the world is Red Bull at this point, isn't it? I mean, you've got, like, the New York Red Bulls and the MLS. I mean, they sponsor just about every kind of extreme sport you can find now. You know, I remember when we were in Austria, the Salzburg ice hockey team over there is the Salzburg Red Bulls. They must spend an insane amount of money on marketing, and it's kind of strange to see them in every corner of the globe.
Well, all you have to do is look at that bloke that jumped out of the balloon, Boomgartner or whatever his name is. I mean, I just assumed he was jumping in a oversized Red Bull can.
Yeah.
Because it was everywhere, but they are incredible at marketing.
Yeah.
Themselves with extreme sports and sort of sexy sports that they aren't that well known, but everyone loves looking at them. I mean, they're very unique and usually have lots of yeah, have lots of crashes and extremities about them. So they've done really well, but they're usually in minor sports. I mean, they're not really in a major sport. I mean, the MLS, I wouldn't call a major sport at all.
Would you find it hard to support a team called the Red Bulls?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's taking it a bit far.
Yeah.
I mean, imagine if you were supporting like the Western Starbucks here
yeah.
in America or something, and that. I think if the team name is your sponsor, that it's a bit much. The New South Wales ANZs.
Yeah. It's just, I guess the other thing there as well is, like we've talked quite a few times on this, one of the things we like about sport is the history. And even if, you know, you are the Western Sydney Wanderers and you've only just come into existence, at least with the name you can kind of blur your eyes and link it to other, you know, existing franchises, and they can kind of pretend that there's a bit of history there. But if you're called the frickin', you know, the Waffle Irons or something, then you've got no, there's no pretense of any kind of culture or history there.
No, and it sullies your perception of the team, and it almost seems childish. I don't know. It doesn't sit well with me. The sponsorship's just creeping a bit too much, and especially sponsorship of betting, especially when you get the halftime reports, and all codes are going this way now, where they give you live updates on odds at halftime, and the bloke actually looks like a commentator and all the rest of it.
Oh, Jamie Rogers here.
Yeah, but even the guy, that fat bloke that they have on the sidelines at the rugby league and rugby union that updates you from the sideline, I mean, that's starting to blur some big lines there.
Oh, the Australia is a joke in terms of how it regulates gambling. It's just the Wild West right now. So, yeah, I think that'll change a lot going forward, but it's absurd. And like I said before, you're just asking for some kind of betting controversy when, like, you're getting such a close relationship between the betting and the sport. We started off with the rugby test, and I think that's a good place to move on to next, because it was a match. I've seen a lot of people writing it off. I think there might be some people in the press who don't actually watch much rugby union, so they think if there aren't tries scored, then it can't be an entertaining game, because I thought this was a fantastic game of rugby to watch. Australia and New Zealand tying, what, 18-all, was it?
They did indeed. And you know what this was, Eric? This is finally Australia stepping out and smacking people upside the head. The issue is, though, is that I've seen this from the Australian team before, where they'll put in one good performance and then they'll probably go overseas and lose to Italy. But look, this is how they need to play the game regularly. But the issue is that it seems like, and especially when it's in the tight five, like they put in this one great performance and suddenly everyone believes again, and then they go off the boil and they say, oh, we've achieved now. We can just relax a bit rather than keeping up that level of intensity every game. But this is how they need to play. I mean, they didn't beat the All Blacks, but a tie is still a hell of a good result. But this is how they need to play more often. Smack people upside the head.
Yeah, it was a real seesawing affair. It was very, like you said, it was very willing, very physical. I mean, although he's obviously going to be criticised for it in New Zealand, I thought Hickenbotham belting the crap out of McCaw a little bit was effective, because it was probably the worst game I've seen out of McCaw for a little while. He seemed to really get drawn off his game a little bit.
Oh, I think, Richie, I don't know how much longer that guy's got left in him, mate. I don't know what's holding him together. I assume it's baling twine and some sticky tape.
I guess when you have some giant man headbutt you in the head, it kind of would put you off your game a little bit.
Well, that was dumb. That was incredibly dumb. And he did the Quade Cooper knee to the face. And how did that turn out for Quade Cooper? So Hickenbotham will get a couple of weeks for that. And it's just silly. And you can say it was good for that game, but really, what does it achieve? Because he's going to get a couple of weeks suspension, and it just doesn't really send out right message. And if I was Richie McCaw, I would have found him in a dark alley and bloody bopped him.
Yeah, I understand. And you are a New Zealander, so you're going to say that. But in that situation, when you're vastly outclassed, it is a reasonably common tactic to take your opposition's key player and, you know, belt him. Like if you're playing Peyton Manning in American football, you go and you try and kill him, because then they can't win without him. So it was a dirty move. I don't deny that. It wasn't very sportsmanlike, but I think it worked.
Well, I wonder if that's really what did it. I mean, Richie himself has even admitted that he's burnt out and he's taking a sabbatical after this and not going on the spring tour or anything of that and taking a break. I mean, he's been in that team a long time, and he's easily the one player that's targeted and harassed and belted at the bottom of rucks the most. I mean, I imagine his body's just breaking down. I don't know if he can play full seasons anymore. He's just getting to that level, and maybe they just need to play him a little bit less.
Yeah, manage him a little bit better. Otherwise in the game, it was a pretty impressive performance from a Wallabies pack that was really rubbish throughout the season, because they haven't looked great. The back line kind of fell apart when we needed him. You know, lots of key drops and stuff for the last 20 minutes, but mind you, neither side could hang on to the ball. But I was impressed by some of the signs. Like you said, the pack looked good. I thought Beal played a pretty damn good game. He seemed to manage the match quite well.
Yeah, I have no idea why Beal hasn't been played at number 10 more often. I've been harping on about this for a little while anyway. You don't really have a number 10 that's great kicking tactically, but he did a great job with the Rebels when he came in at number 10 and really marshalled the team well. And he was a number 10 to begin with. He started at New South Wales at fly half. But he's very dynamic and he's very exciting, but he's been on the Perry Weepu diet still, it seems, or the Buddy Franklin preseason training diet. You were texting me on the way.
I think it's the Buddy Franklin Saturday night diet more than his preseason diet. I'm wondering what his party habits are like. He looks like he's an extremely talented guy who just looks like he's run a marathon about 30 minutes into every match. And I don't even think it's the fact that he's fat. I just generally don't think he's gotten more than 5 hours sleep in a month. Like, he just looks really worn out.
Maybe he's still hanging out with Cipriani.
Yeah, maybe he's got the Jay Cutler approach going. Just sheer talent and
and screw the rest, who cares?
Yeah, but look, that was definitely the best game he's played at the Wallabies for a long time. And I've been on him for his tactical kicking previously, but I thought he was good in that match. He found touch quite a bit. You know, he managed to find more space than anybody else did when they were kicking with the ball. So I was really happy with the way. I mean, he looked like his passing was nice and flat, and he was drawing guys up to the line. I thought he played well.
Yeah, and in the end, I think New Zealand was the winner on the day.
I don't know how you could come to that conclusion. I think if you look at the two teams' reactions after the match, it would tell you something else.
Eric, we kicked 33 of the 36 points.
What?
Oh, Mike Harris is from New Zealand, baby.
All right. Yeah, okay.
Well. It was like seeing England interviewed after the 2005 Ashes, where they interviewed the first five guys and they were all from Australia or South Africa. They interviewed Mike Harris at halftime, this thick New Zealand accent. I couldn't stop laughing. But it was great. I think that's a team you can work with. And then you get guys like Hall back, obviously, to replace Sharp once he's gone. And you're going to have a bit of team. But it's just those props again. The props have got to be less fat.
Yeah, yeah. I was thinking that while I was watching the game.
I mean, it's very noticeable.
Yes.
The difference between the All Blacks props and the Australian props, and also what came out of this was Miguel Amu getting his 100th.
Yeah, and potentially not many more from that game.
No, the Otahu Nugget. I think he could be cooked.
Yeah.
He's taken a battering as well, but he's been a hell of a player.
He looked like he'd taken a battering by about game two, so the fact that he's made it to 100 is impressive.
It never goes backwards, though. He's got that uncanny ability of just scraping a meter or two every time he touches the ball. But to play 100 games as a hooker is incredible, because the force they put their neck and their back and everything through is incredible. And what a man. And he's there aren't many of them. What are they?
Third.
The third New Zealander, but there aren't many in world rugby in general.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
So to get 100 games is pretty good, especially in a physical position like that.
All right, Kirk, I'm going to go for a little bit of a throwback here, because we haven't had a bit of a game segment on here for a little while, so I've prepared one for you. Are you ready?
Oh, yeah.
Good, good. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask you about a whole bunch of different propositions of people and teams winning a championship or qualifying for something or whatever. I'm going to get you for a word or just the first thing that pops into your head about their chance.
Okay.
You got it?
Yeah, I'm all over this.
So what about, first up, Rafael Nadal winning more than one Open championship in the remainder of his career?
The remainder of his career?
Yeah.
As in all four majors?
As in any of them.
Oh, no, he'll get more than that. Who the hell's going to beat him in France or Paris or wherever the hell
Nadal,
it is?
He might just break down. I mean, he barely made it. He fell apart in Wimbledon and didn't even play at US, correct?
No, what he needs to do? He needs to take the Tiger Woods approach and only play four times a year.
I'm not sure that works in tennis.
Just say you're injured and protect your ranking in between each tournament, and then come back and kill everybody.
Okay, so you're feeling a good, strong chance.
Yeah, strong chance. I think he'll get the French Open again. If he doesn't play, just don't play so much tennis. Not
okay. In a nutshell, what do you think Tiger's chance of winning one more major is?
Not great.
Great.
Yeah. There's just too many good young players coming through and people that I didn't even know anymore. And the old guard of Mickelson and guys like that just seem to be unable to do it again, except for Els. Where the hell did Ernie Els come from? I assumed he was dead somewhere, but he's back. But there aren't many multiple winners coming through anymore. You've got guys like Fowler and McIlroy really powering through, but he just – there's something wrong with his swing and his body's falling apart. I just can't. I don't think he's gotten him anymore, Eric, and I feel terrible.
Not great. Not great. Okay, next one. Gary Ablett winning another premiership.
Ooh. Nah, not happening. Too many young players.
Doesn't have to be at Gold Coast.
Yeah, but how long is his contract there?
5 years.
Ooh, so he's going to be...
No, he's only got another three after... he's got the next three more seasons there.
So he'll be in his, what, late 20s?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he'll probably get out of the Gold Coast. No, I'll say he'll get one more. Ooh. One more. When he's in his late 20s, somebody will want to pick him up.
So you're feeling he's got a shot?
Yeah, I don't think he can stay at the Gold Coast, though. They built a team the wrong way. You can't rely on talent like that. It's too hit and miss.
Okay, what about Mick Malthouse?
What, with Carlton?
Whoever. What is the chance that Mick Malthouse wins another premiership?
No, not a chance. I mean, he won 1-7 in the last 17 years. Get out.
Okay.
Especially with Carlton. That's the most overhyped team I've ever seen.
Yeah. Well, I look for... I can't wait till next year. You're going to be frothing just to start talking about that all over again. So what about Ricky Ponting winning back the Ashes? Perhaps not as captain, but in the team.
No, there's no way he can... He won't be in the team in the Ashes, surely. When the next hell does year? The Ashes start? Yeah, I don't think he can make it through this summer.
Wow.
He's only... What, he's got an average of in the last 18 months of 23 or something like that. I mean, even...
I think he's done pretty well in the last 10 or so.
Oh, no, I still wouldn't say that. He's got a couple of 50s and okay. We've got 100 and a 50. I just don't think he's got it. He's getting old. He's got a reluctance to put away shots. His pull shot isn't there anymore and he just refuses to stop doing it. You know what Tendulkar did when he realized he couldn't pull the ball as much and play slashing cuts and all the rest of it? Just simplified his game. And that's why he's still so good.
Yeah.
Because he realized he didn't have the shots anymore and he adapted. Whereas Ponting still thinks he's 25 and can play pull shots whenever he feels like it. And that's why he keeps getting out.
Okay. So not a good chance there. All right. Two to go. Next one. New Zealand qualifying for another Soccer World Cup in the next 2 decades.
Ooh. Wow. You said, I think we can continue winning the Oceania League, especially now that Australia's out of there and have declared themselves Asian. So that gets us through that quite nicely because Vanuatu and New Caledonia only have 12 soccer players total, I think, which helps us a lot. But it's beating this fifth European team or South American team or Asian team or whoever we've got to play in the next round. That's really where it really gets hard. We're going to lose our best defender, Nelson, who's been an absolute warrior. Maybe Reed can come in and take over from that, but we don't have that much firepower.
So, I need a phrase here, Kirk. I need a nutshell.
I'm going to say that we can do it again. In the next 2 decades, in the next 20 years, at least one of the next 5 World Cups we've got to get back in.
Okay. All right, last one, Kirk. What are the chances the Bills reach a Super Bowl while they're still in Buffalo?
Zero. Absolutely no chance. And I'm saying this as a Bills fan. We stink. Who's going to take us there? Ryan Fitzpatrick? Get the hell out of here. We paid
You only have to hang in there another couple of years and the Patriots will fall apart. There's no future in New York. You'll be playing against Ryan Tannehill. Like, this, you know, the division's going to open up.
Yeah, but then we'll be playing against Tim Tebow. How the hell are we going to beat that? You can't beat God. So we're going to be in a whole heap of trouble. If the Bills keep these crazy things going, they'll probably just dump the guaranteed money that Fitzpatrick and then get Sanchez anyway. Huzzah!
Yeah.
And then they'll move to Canada.
So, while they're in Buffalo, you're not feeling it?
No, I'm not feeling it. I mean, how long till they move to Canada? It can't be that long. They're already cheating on us with Canada anyway.
I think it's as long as your coach is alive.
Even Canada doesn't want them. Whenever they go play a game up there, the other team always has much more support.
Yeah, well. Okay.
Man, it's depressing supporting these guys.
Oh, well. I wanted to see if I could, you know, tempt you into it, but you're not biting.
No, well, we spent $100 million on that defense and they allow 57 points or whatever. What the hell?
Yeah. Yeah, you really need Mario Williams to start turning up. It's potential that it's just the Wade Phillips magic in Houston making everyone look good.
Oh, God. Talk about something else.
Okay, let's stop talking about American football and start talking about American football because
It's better.
It's time to make our bets for the week, Kirk, because they've been going so well. as always, upset pick, lock of the week, Sunday night. So I'll start off with your upset pick, please.
I'm going to say Washington over the New York Giants. He's so sexy.
Yeah?
It's RG3. He looked incredible last week, and now he's actually figured out how to slide and run out of bounds rather than going on kamikaze dives into linebackers. And he's incredibly accurate, which is great. And the Lions seems to be blocking for him. Everyone seems to be so excited and so pumped about the Redskins at the moment. And he is a terribly exhilarating player. And I just don't like Eli Manning.
Yeah, me neither. It is a potential that he's the best quarterback in the league right now, though.
Yeah, I know, which is annoying. But I just like the razzmatazz surrounding Washington.
Yeah, okay.
He's like a Michael Vick that can throw the ball.
Well, Michael Vick could throw the ball once upon a time. Now he's, I think, a carcass that just gets wheeled out onto the field. Okay, so that's paying $3.14. So you're going for something pretty stout there. I'm going a little bit more conservative. I'm going to say Tampa Bay Buccaneers at home against the New Orleans Saints. They're paying $2.06. It's not, I don't know. I feel like New Orleans are good, but Tampa Bay have been real solid this year, and I think they've got the kind of defense that can really worry New Orleans. They've got a fair bit of size, and I think that they can. I mean, New Orleans can't stop people scoring the ball. They just roll out the red carpet. So it's really just about Tampa Bay's ability to stop New Orleans from scoring. So I like their chances.
Yeah, well, if Madden's anything to go by with their progression analysis, Josh Freeman's going to be the greatest thing that ever lived. So he got to about 94 or 96 or something. I don't know. Maybe it's because he cut his hair. But New Orleans has just got too much scandal around it with the interim coach, and then they're back in. Goodell's having another review of everything. There's just too much controversy surrounding them, so it's not great.
Too many distractions. All right, who are you locking in this week?
Oh, geez. I'm going to say New England over the Jets because Tebow's still not starting. I know I continue to bet against God, but I think New England will be too good. Sanchez just isn't accurate enough, I don't think, to really worry your secondary, which is, you know, almost non-existent. But I don't even know if Sanchez can hit somebody in a practice route at the moment. So I'm going to say that New England dominate the Jets, and then we see Tebow!
You really need to start hoping for some Jets losses right now, because it's not looking very likely that you'll see him start in Thanksgiving.
Oh, there's always time.
Yeah, this time.
Two more losses, I think. If they go two matches behind 500, he's in.
Yeah. Okay. I agree. I think New England will absolutely destroy New York. I think all this bad press that the Patriots have been getting will really fire them up. People have been questioning whether Brady's still got it. I think he's actually playing with a shoulder injury myself. But, yeah.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised. He throws it about 100 times a game.
Well, he was listed on the injury report going into the match, and although Belichick does like to fuck with that and just put, you know, half the team on that every week, he did get hit at the start of the third quarter with a pretty big tackle. And I know Simmons thought it was a concussion, but I thought it was a shoulder injury, and he underthrew just about every one of his passes after that. So hopefully it's nothing too permanent. But I think we'll whoop them. Anyway, my lock of the week is Green Bay. Going to St. Louis, paying $1.43. I think the Giant woke from its slumber last week. I think that was an indication of how good they can be.
Yeah, they're great. And when you got somebody like Aaron Rodgers, you don't become terrible overnight. So maybe that was all they needed to really fire them up. But they've got a kind of stinky defense as well. But St. Louis, I'm still not completely sold on them. So I think your money's safe there.
Well, they looked good, but then Amendola went down, who's kind of been Bradford's favorite target on offense. You know, Jackson, as you know too well, is still struggling a little bit with his ability to produce on the ground. So, yeah, the St. Louis's defense is very impressive, but they seem to real struggle to put up points.
Yeah, no, I agree. Get there, Green Bay. Get there.
Okay, Sunday night, Kirk. Pittsburgh going to Cincinnati. Who do you think is going to win?
Oh, man, I'm getting all over Pittsburgh. Are you kidding me? Cincinnati just lost to Cleveland, and God hates Cleveland.
Yeah, that Cincinnati game hurt. That was real bad stuff. But Pittsburgh also, you know, did lose last week as well, didn't they? Who did they lose? They lost on Thursday night?
Yeah, I'm starting to question whether they're actually kind of bad.
Yeah, they just got so many injuries. It's pretty disastrous for them. they basically don't have anything resembling an offensive line anymore. And if you can't keep Roethlisberger upright, then it's just all over Red Rover, because he's not somebody who's really going to protect the ball particularly well. So, yeah, I mean, they don't really seem to have a running game anymore. They've still got amazing wide receivers. Yeah, that's right. They lost to the Titans in a game where they kind of, turned the ball over too much and gave up two key drives. So if they can get some key players back on defense, I think they can compete. I don't know why, Kirk. I'm going to go for Cincinnati again.
Oh, God. Good luck losing your money with that one. Enjoy.
Yeah, I feel like Pittsburgh just aren't very good anymore. Cincinnati were bad last week, but I think they've got a better passing game at this point. I mean, neither team has much in the way of a run game. Both teams are pretty well awash on defense, and I think Cincinnati moved the ball better in the air.
Well, there you go. I just can't tip a team that lost to Cleveland.
Yeah. No, I feel incredibly dirty. I think I've compromised everything that I held dear by doing that, but whatever. So that'll do it. We will be back, not this week again. We'll be back in a week's time. It's a little bit of a mental, real-world situation for us this week. But we'll be back in a week's time with another key issue and some more dud bets to make on football. In the meantime, you can follow this podcast at sportspolygamy.com. You can also find us on Facebook and iTunes, where you can subscribe to keep track. Until next Monday, I'm Eric George.
I'm Kirk Dalziel.
That's Sports Polygamy. See ya.